Welcome to the Digital Story Show, new tools for the creative mind. The Digital Story Show takes you inside with tips for the creative pursuit of photography, music, video, hardware, software, techniques, and hacks. You'll soon find yourself thinking less about buttons and menus and more about expressing the artist inside us all. Now the Digital Story Show with Derek Story.
April 17th, 2007. The Digital Story Show with Derek Story. Today's topic, 10 years of digital photography. My gosh, isn't it amazing how fast a decade can go by? I guess especially when you're having a lot of fun. So I've been working on this project, and I'm going to talk a little bit about it today, and it'll be sort of an ongoing conversation also because I haven't finished it yet. But I'm archiving my digital photography all the way back from the beginning, which for me began in 1997. It's very interesting. So I have all of my images burned to CDs, burned to DVDs, on stray hard drives, kind of all over the place. And what I want to do is I want to pull them all into one photo management system, and I've chosen Aputure for this project, and I'll give you a little bit more information why in a bit. And then so that I have all of that information in one place so I can search and use it and all that sort of stuff. Because what I discovered was I wasn't even looking at those pictures anymore. Every time that I wanted to see something from 1999, I would have to, you know, go back and find the CD and put it in. And if you've ever loaded an optical disc on a Mac laptop, you know that it's not the speediest experience in the world. No knock on Macs, but that optical drives just is not their fastest sort of thing. So anyway, so I want it all in one place so I can search and use this information. And as I've been looking at these photos from 1998, 1999, I'm just amazed at how much digital photography has changed. Now, I'm going to tell you about my very first real digital camera. And what I mean by real is that a camera that didn't have to be tethered to the computer. Because technically, my first digital camera, the first camera that I made images with, was a Kinectix, the round eyeball-like webcam that was tethered to the computer, and you can make super low-res images, and you could even capture really bad QuickTime movies with it. So that was when I first started kind of playing around with a digital imaging. But then I remember when I went to Macworld in 1997, and I bought the Kodak DC20 digital camera. Now, this, I got to just read you the specs on this thing. I have the box right here. I have the box with the camera inside. I have all the components because I'm a bit of a, you know, not a pack rack, because I do get rid of stuff I don't need, but I do like to hang on to old photography equipment and everything. But check this out. Okay, so this is the Kodak DC20 digital camera. Resolution, 493 by 373 pixels. 24-bit color, stores up to 16 images. Now remember, this is a camera that did not have removable memory. It just had the memory that was inside of it. You could store up to 16 images. Focus-free lens from 0.5 meters to infinity. Sensitivity, ISO 800/1600, and it decided which one. And this is one of the things I thought was pretty cool about this camera, is that it really did have a, you know, pretty hefty ISO. It was a long time before I got back to shooting at ISO 800/1600. Lightweight, it only 4.2 ounces without battery. And you had to use a serial connection with it. You could not, it did not have USB built into it for either Mac or Windows. So you had to use a serial connection. And since it doesn't have an LCD monitor on the back, you have no idea what you captured with it. You would just take pictures and then connect it to your computer and then, you know, look at these gorgeous 493 by 373 pixel pictures. Now, I paid for this $179 US. It was on special at Macworld. discounted from $199, and I thought I was in heaven. I remember as I opened the box and I'm just going, oh my gosh, I have a freestanding digital camera, and I just started shooting everything in the world with it. Not too long after that, although I would have preferred to be sooner, Apple came out with a new version of their QuickTake. And I had passed on the first version because it was just too expensive for me. I got this little Kodak for $179, which at the time was, you know, I mean, I knew this wasn't great photography, right? So I wasn't going to spend a whole lot of money on something that was going to change next week. But the QuickTake 200, I believe, came out, and it was the camera that was made by Fuji, and it actually had removable memory. You could use smart media with it, and it was very alluring. For one thing, my resolution moved all the way up to 640 by 480 pixels. So I had gone from, you know, the smaller, not even VGA size camera to at least a VGA camera with removable memory, so I could carry extra memory with me. So now I'm getting sort of excited. This is kind of fun. I believe it had an LCD, albeit not a very good one, but it did have an LCD, and or did it have an LCD? I need to pull that thing out now. I think it had an LCD, but I did have 640 by 480, and it actually did capture some metadata too. So when I'm looking back at my older pictures, my old 640 by 480s captured with that camera, I can actually tell which camera I used. So I used that for a while, and you know, I was able to get a little bit more serious about digital photography. And I don't mean serious in terms of making prints and stuff. I mean, I'm shooting film, I'm doing weddings with film cameras, I'm doing all this stuff at this time. But I mean serious in the sense that I could, you know, possibly put these pictures on a web page. I could email these pictures to people. I mean, I could actually take snapshots that I could share with other folks electronically. So that was a bit of a breakthrough, because with the film camera at that time, if I wanted to share an email picture, I either had to have a CD burned when I got the film processed, and they would usually just do all of them. And, you know, so a lot of those shots I wouldn't want, or I would have to scan it on my flatbed scanner and do all that rigmarole and then email it or put on a web page. So this was kind of a big deal, being able to just take a picture and immediately share it with somebody electronically. It wasn't really until my next digital camera, which was an Olympus 1.3 megapixel camera. I believe it was a D400. It was a clamshell style, so they sort of took a design that was working very well for them in the film world, where they had a sliding clamshell cover and the lens would come out, and they adapted it to digital. Now, it also used smart media, but for the first time, because it captured at 1.3 megapixels, you could actually make a print. You could make a 4x6 or a 3x5 print from this camera. So now not only were you able to do electronic things, you were also able to actually put something on paper. Plus, it had a few more, you know, photography-type controls in terms of, you know, controlling the image. Now, none of these cameras at this time really allowed you to take control of your photography. You were in really, literally, point-and-shoot mode. However, we're starting with this Olympus 1.3 megapixel camera. I was finally able to, you know, control the image a little bit and to make a print. The other thing about it was that it did a much better job of recording metadata. And, you know, at the time, that didn't seem like, you know, that big a deal to me. However, now it's very important, because I have, you know, as I look through my collection, my early collection of digital images, you can really tell when the Olympus kicks in, because suddenly I have so much more information about the photos. Very helpful just in terms of aperture and shutter speed and ISO and things like that. So not only was I able to make prints, I was actually able to know why, you know, what was going on behind the scenes when I captured the image. The next phase was sort of a blur, really, because I got another Olympus, a 2-megapixel camera, and I think that's when I started with the C3000 series and C3030, something like that. And I really like those cameras, and I got a couple of them over time, but I sort of went through this whole phase of these high-end compact cameras. I played with the Olympus cameras. The Canon came out with the G series, and I started playing with some of those, the G3, the G4, and you know, so suddenly I had a camera that had a hot shoe that I could put a flash on, and the same flash that worked on my Canon SLRs would work on my Canon G series cameras. I could use my flash extension cord. I could, you know, use a flash bracket. I had even more controls. I had more metadata, and I had more resolution, which means I could make bigger prints. Plus, at this point, Canon and Olympus both were putting pretty good glass on these high-end point-and-shoot cameras. Now, digital SLRs had made the scene at this time, but they were just like wildly expensive. I mean, even as a photographer who was making a living off photography and writing about photography, I could not justify spending $10,000 or $20,000 on a body that I knew, because I was in technology at this time. I've been working as an editor for O'Reilly Media since 1999. So, I mean, this, you know, I was right in the middle of everything that was happening in technology. I knew that these bodies were going to change. Boom, boom, boom. Every 6 months, we were going to see something different. I could not rationalize spending that kind of money. So I stuck with the high-end, so-called advanced amateur models, and started actually incorporating these things into my shoots. At weddings, I would have a Canon G model with a flash bracket in a flash, and not only would I be shooting primarily with film, but I would grab Canons and grab shots and stuff with the Canon, and then that way I could get those images up on the website that night so that people could have a glimpse of how their wedding looked. And they looked pretty good. And if there's something that they really fell in love with, then I could make a 5x7 print, possibly even an 8x10, depending on how good all the variables were in terms of exposure and so forth. So, you know, they actually began to creep into my workflow. The real breakthrough for me in terms of being able to use digital photography as a photographer and not as a hobbyist was when Canon came out with the 10D. And that was the digital SLR that really kind of brought together performance. It was a 6.2 megapixel body. I still have it, by the way. I just love the way it felt like a real camera. It behaved like a real camera. It had pretty good color and a pretty good exposure system. One of the problems I had had with cameras prior to that, digital cameras, was that they just, like, for instance, couldn't capture red. It just blew their mind. If you tried to take a picture of a red rose, it would just like go wah, you know, it nuke out on you. And there was really no way to control some of that stuff unless you did a lot of post-production, which, being an event shooter, I never really wanted to sit there and fiddle with a simple shot of a rose for an hour just to make sure that it looked okay. It seemed like it'd be better just to take it with a film camera, have the lab develop it and scan it and be done with it. But when the 10D came out, I suddenly felt like I had a real digital SLR that was affordable. It was a couple thousand dollars instead of $10,000, instead of $20,000. And then I began to really use digital photography as part of my professional workflow. I could do weddings with digital and with film. I didn't feel comfortable getting rid of film at 6 megapixels, because, you know, if they wanted an 11x14, if they wanted even a 16x20, especially if there's any cropping involved, I just wasn't comfortable with stretching 6 megapixels to those sorts of dimensions. You know, even though most folks want print smaller than that, you never really know. So I would continue to shoot film and digital side by side. Sometimes I'd carry two cameras, or I'd have an assistant shooting film or digital, and I would shoot both or something. So we'd always do some sort of combination. But right at the 6-megapixel range with the 10D was I able to start getting serious about digital photography. And then, of course, now we've worked up to 8 megapixels, and I'm using a 5D for my professional work, which is at 12 megapixels. And I'm with the 5D was the first time that I became totally comfortable having digital only and not having to have film, because I had enough resolution, I had enough control over the image, and I had enough confidence in the type of pictures that it would produce, whereas I didn't need that film safety net. Now, what's interesting about this, as we look back, it really took 10 years to go from that first little Kodak camera that I had, that DC20, to the Canon 5D, which sort of marks, you know, my ability to say, I do not need film anymore. I keep film because I like film, but I do not need film anymore. It went from 1997 to 2007 to make that full transition. And you know, it's funny, we think things move really fast, and to some degrees they do. But on the other hand, it took 10 years. And I know some people, you know, jumped faster than I did, but really, I think I take a very middle-of-the-road approach, and I don't think I'm too conservative, and I don't think I'm, you know, adopt things too fast. So here we are, 10 years later, I'm trying to catalog all that stuff that I captured before Aperture came along, before Lightroom was available, before iPhoto was even around, and trying to get all that stuff organized so that I can use it both in historical sense, but also just for fun. Just for fun, on web pages, email, little prints, stuff like that. So I'm going to take a quick detour here for a second. We're going to do a little virtual camera club business, and then I'll talk a little bit about, when I come back, the process that I use, that I'm using right now for cataloging this stuff. Okay, on the photo assignment front for the digital story, I've published the gallery from March. Self-portrait. We had a great turnout. Some people I know were a little nervous about participating because it involved taking their own picture, but we actually had a really good turnout. We had over 30 shots that were submitted and made it in. The gallery looks great. It's on the site right now. You should go take a look at it. One of the things I want to mention, though, that some folks are getting a little sloppy about doing their subject line correctly when they send in their entry. And it has to be, and I reiterated how to do it again in the text that goes with this month's photo gallery, and it's always on the submissions page. If you just click on the submission button, it's always there. But please make sure that you do, you know, photo assignment, and then I prefer colon, and then, you know, in this case, March 2007, spell out March, because I get so much email, and I get a lot of junk email, too. Because, you know, the email address is out there, that I have to filter in order to keep my head above water. And I don't want to lose your assignment. And this one took me a little bit longer to get out because I actually had to go back and sort of dig through the inbox, you know, go there. I have a feeling there's more than this. And I would find photos that were in the junk mail folder and so forth that hadn't been labeled correctly. So make sure you do that subject line correctly so that I can get your shot in and so that you can share it with all of your friends. Now, the photo assignment for this month, Window to the Soul. I want you to think about this a little bit. I mean, there's all sorts of great possibilities. Obviously, you know, we say that the eyes are the windows to the soul. So just on eye shots alone, we could go nuts, right? Because, you know, there's eyes are, for me, infinitely fascinating. But then, you know, there could be other interpretations of this also. And so there's still that chance for creativity. And I saw a lot of creativity on the last two assignments in particular, both on texture and on self-portrait. And so really kind of see what you can do here. But believe me, you really can't go wrong with this assignment. If your craftsmanship is there, you're going to end up with a good shot. So see what you can do. The end of April is the deadline for this assignment. So make sure you get your submission and make sure you label that subject line correctly. And I want to keep this rolling. I want to have another dynamite gallery. Grab shots. We're doing great on grab shots. Keep them rolling in. I'll keep publishing them. I love grab shots. I think everyone else does too. And just in general, there's been a lot of mail from you talking about things that I've talked about on the show or things that it made you think of. Feel free to drop me a letter anytime. And, you know, in that subject line, when you send me mail, if you go the digital story and then you put, you know, whatever you want to say, that way and make sure that the mail gets to me. All right. So let's get back to this 10 years of digital photography for a second, because I got a couple more things I want to say before I wrap up. So in terms of cataloging this decade of digital photography, I did some things right, at least. I'm happy to say that. And one of the things that I did right was that I saved my master images to optical disc and then labeled the disc, you know, and in the beginning I was using CDs because that's all I could burn to. And of course the images weren't that big, so CDs seemed okay. Later on, of course, you know, when I got into, you know, 2002, 2003 or so, where the images started getting bigger and I could burn a DVD that had more capacity, I did that. But a lot of the early stuff, 97, 98, 99, is all on CD. So what I did was I actually put the images in folders and then burned them to CD and then labeled it, you know, in my case, Story Photography 1 with the year, Story Photography 2, so on and so forth. And I did use cataloging software early on to sort of catalog what's on these things, but I sort of gave up because, as I said earlier, CDs and DVDs are such a hassle for me. I just hate it. When I want a shot, I want it fast, and I don't want to fiddle around with the disc. So I hadn't really been playing with these images very much. So I started doing some research. Okay, now I want to pull these into photo management software, and what do I want to use? You know I'm a big fan of Adobe Lightroom. I think it's terrific software. You know I'm a big fan of Apple Aperture, and you know I'm a big fan of iPhoto. So I mean, I have, you know, some really nice choices, and I own all of these applications. But there's this one feature in Aperture that I really like, that on the import, in the import dialog box, you have, or drop-down menu, you have the option of importing folders into a project. And I chose Aperture for this overall endeavor for that very reason, because what I could do is, I could create a project, let's say, you know, disk one, 2006, I'd put the CD in, so I have a project, and I, you know, I had all these folders full of images on the CD. So what Aperture does then, it reads that CD, and when I hit import, it imports all the images, and I can keep their original file name, or I can add to them. I kept the original file name, because in those days, I was using the file name as a way to sort of describe the image. But then it takes all of my folders that were on that CD and turns them into albums within the project in Aperture. So it actually takes the structure that I created on the CD and mirrors that structure inside the project inside of Aperture. And I have to tell you, this is really cool. And one of the reasons why it's really cool is because on those early images, there isn't a lot of metadata. Right? Because, you know, the camera wasn't recording that much metadata, and I didn't really have a way to add metadata, you know, without being, you know, super fastidious, which I just wasn't in those days. So the folders that I used to name, you know, so the collection of images that they contained is valuable metadata to me, that it provides me with information that's very useful to me and that I can search on and so forth. So by Aperture, you know, converting that folder information into album information, now suddenly I have something that I can search on in Aperture without starting all over again. So that was the reason why I'm going with Aputure right now. I'm probably about a third of the way through the project. I'm up to, I think I'm in the middle of 2001. It's just something where I just set it up. I set up the computer. You know, I've got my book full of CDs and DVDs, and I'll put one in, and then, you know, I'll let it do its thing. It'll copy it over and stuff while I do other stuff, and then I'll wander back over, and it'll be finished, and I'll pull it out. And, you know, part of the thing that slows it up is that before I put in the next disc, you know, here I have all these images that I haven't seen in years, and so, you know, I have to wander through them a little bit. So I lose a little bit of time kind of going down memory lane there. And then I create a new project, put the next disc in, have it do its thing. And then what I do is I organize all those projects, which represent, you know, the discs that have information on, and I'm putting them in a folder by year. So the way the hierarchy works is that I'll have a, you know, 1997 folder that I can open, and it will have all the discs from 1997. They're labeled, and within all those discs will be albums that, you know, represent the folders that were on the disc. And then I'll have, you know, the next year in a folder, the next year in a folder. So I can collapse the whole thing so all I see are the folders of the years, or I can open up any of the folders and look at all the contents and drill down from there. You know what? And it's actually going to be, you know, darn usable. This is going to be really nice when it's done, and I'll report more on it. I'm sure I'm going to learn some things as I continue to work with it. But that ability to import optical disc into photo management software where the folder names are converted to album names has turned out to be a really big deal for me. And I'll let you know how it goes. So anyway, there's 10 years of digital photography. Amazing. So I have no idea what's going to happen in the next 10 years. I hope you come back at least next week, and we'll pick it up from there. Go take some pictures, work on that photo assignment, take a look at the March photo assignment, and I will see you here next week for the Digital Story. Bye-bye now.
Your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, weblogs, and informative articles, visit www.thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story.